You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. This week, an army inquiry into the abuse of Iraqi detainees at the Abu Ghraib prison says military doctors and medics had a role in the abuse in that they failed to prevent and report it. That was the Fay report. Just last week, a report in the British medical journal The Lancet reached the same conclusions. The report says that the U.S. military medical system, quote, failed to protect detainees' human rights, sometimes collaborated with interrogators or abusive guards, and failed to properly report injuries or deaths caused by beatings, end quote. The Lancet paper was written by Stephen Miles, a physician and bioethicist at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, and he joins us today to talk about his investigation of military doctors and prisoner abuse in Iraq. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about situations like these, when doctors' duties to their patient may conflict with action demanded by colleagues. These dual loyalties and also the circumstances that made these abuses, going beyond those committed by military medical personnel, made them possible in the first place. So if you'd like to join our discussion, our phone number, 1-800-989-8255. Let me introduce my guests. Dr. Stephen Miles is the author of The Lancet Paper. He's a professor of medicine in the Center for Bioethics at the University of Minnesota Medical School in Minneapolis, and he has experience with medical relief efforts overseas. He joins us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Welcome to the program, Dr. Miles.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Vincent Iacopino is the director of research at Physicians for Human Rights in Boston. He's the former medical director of Survivors International, a treatment center for survivors of torture, and he was the principal organizer of an international effort to develop UN guidelines on effective documentation of torture and ill treatment, known as the Istanbul Protocol. Dr. Iacopino joins us today by phone from Nevada. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ira. It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Miles, can you give us a little rundown of why did you undertake this investigation? What made you think that doctors, military doctors, possibly even medics were involved in the abuse at Abu Ghraib?
Well, when the Abu Ghraib scandal broke, I was frankly amazed that there had not been earlier discussion of it by the medical staff in the prison. And so I was primarily concerned with understanding the silence that happened as they must have seen these abuses. Then what happened was a series of public investigations were gradually released, and I went through those documents looking at the performance of the medical system.
And you found a lot of documents, right?
Yeah, I found about 3,000 pages of documents, appendices to the Army's Taguba investigation, which was done in January, and then, of course, the more recent Schlesinger and Fay investigations, as well as the Army Inspector General's investigation. Plus, there were documents that were obtained for the trials of various people in Abu Ghraib. But I would emphasize that the patterns of abuses that have been found don't simply include Abu Ghraib. They also include a number of other detention centers in Iraq and Afghanistan and also at Guantanamo.
Are you saying that your research has shown that the doctors have been complicit in the torture that went on there, or either by not reporting it or not helping some of the prisoners?
Well, the actual prevalence, that is, the frequency, depends on the particular situation. It appears that there was a rather complete failure to provide a system of adequate clinics and infirmaries, TB checks, and so forth for prisoners as required by the Geneva Conventions. In fact, the Inspector General's report of the Army found that this was not present at a minimally adequate level in any of 20 camps that they surveyed. Secondly, there were high-level policies that were made that required or directed physicians to participate in approving and monitoring interrogation plans. At Guantanamo, that included, for example, providing medical records to interrogators. At Abu Ghraib, a psychiatrist and physician were present during interrogation. Then there was also falsification of medical records and death certificates in order to conceal human rights abuses that caused death. There was a failure to report abuses or signs of abuses in order to secure the stopping of these. And in sporadic instances, medics directly participated in the abusive treatment.
Was it their duty to report these things?
Yes, it was, under several things. First off, it was a duty to report these because these were violations of Army regulations, international law, and in fact, U.S. law. And so there was a simple duty for that reason. There was a professional duty because it violated medical ethics. And also there was a duty that's derived from the fact that prison health professionals are supposed to promote the health of detainees. In fact, that by international law is their exclusive obligation. And we know that the victims of torture suffer long-term functional and psychiatric disabilities, difficulties holding jobs, post-traumatic stress disorder, difficulty forming intimate relationships. And so as a part of their responsibility to the health of detainees, they also had a duty.
Mm-hmm. Vincent Iacopino, what's your reaction to this, to these reports?
Well, my reaction is one of outrage, but not surprise. When torture and ill-treatment are practiced to any significant level, physicians and other medical personnel are often in a role where they have the opportunity to observe abuses, Dr. Miles has mentioned, to document as their duty requires, and to provide care based on medical need. These are the principles of medical ethics and international humanitarian law and so on. It is a very significant study because it really represents a critical first step that indicates the need for a wider study to know exactly what the nature and extent of abuses were and the complicity of physicians. And as I said, it will be an additional window into the larger context of what really happened at this location, Abu Ghraib, and other locations where apparently the administration, at least through the Department of Defense, authorized what we consider to be methods of ill-treatment and or torture.
When you say you're not surprised by this, do you mean that because this happens in other wars, other times, other places?
Because there are many historical examples to draw from. We are we know this from other country examples, because physicians and other medical personnel have the opportunity to see the consequences of torture because of the symbolic role that health professionals play as arbiters of death and injury, if you will. I think that there's an unconscious attempt for the perpetrators of these acts to actually involve people to gain some legitimacy, either directly or perhaps just to assuage their own moral conscience.
I disagree with Dr. Iacopino on one aspect of what he said. While it is true that physicians and medics often become complicit in situations where torture and human rights abuses occur, one of the striking things is that this is a departure from the United States' own history with regard to the treatment of POWs. Insofar as I've been able to determine, for example, during World War II, the medical treatment of detainees was actually exemplary. And though there were abuses, medical abuses committed in South Vietnam by South Vietnamese detainees who were held in South Vietnamese prisons, as far as I can determine, the detainees held under U.S. supervision were reasonably well treated. And so what this represents is actually a departure from our own military history.
Sure. Excuse me, I think we would agree on that. I was not referring to historical examples within the U.S., but I was referring to other countries, especially the ones that I've investigated in my work with Physicians for Human Rights, India, Turkey, mm-hmm. Mexico, elsewhere.
The late Stephen Ambrose writes often in his books about how the U.S. soldiers were always greeted it, and the occupying forces as they came into a country, the citizens would run to them versus going to the other allied forces, for knowing that they would get good treatment from the GIs. Mm-hmm. And so historically, it's interesting what you say. Where did all this information come from? These, Dr. Miles, these come from the records that you just uncovered, and these records that no one else had seen? I mean, why do you know it and these other people don't know it?
Well, for one thing, the records were really started being released in May, and so May and June, early June, and actually through mid-June was a period of time when most of the records became available. And Lancet and I worked very closely together to update this article right up to the time when they had to go to press. And fortunately, Lancet actually produces its journal 1 week after it goes to press, so I was actually able to put in new documents mm-hmm. as they became available. But I think the other part of it is that reporters faced with these large reports simply did not have the historical background or the interest to pursue them for the bits of data, the sentences and paragraphs that dealt with a particular medical story, and to assemble that data in relationship to the specific area of medical treaties that pertain to medical participation in torture. The other thing that very much struck me in terms of looking at the policy memos signed that were developed in Department of Justice and the Defense Department was that they were entirely oblivious to the special ethics and special history of medical personnel with regard to human rights abuses. And it was, in fact, their inattentiveness to this distinction between the role of medical professionals and ordinary soldiers that to some degree started the process of blurring the borders which set the stage for these abuses.
Yeah, that's not all the policies we're ignorant of. I think there's a very striking contradiction in the methods of interrogation that were permitted, authorized, the so-called the hooding and the forced nakedness, stress positions, manipulation of diet, sleep, and other environmental conditions. These are forms of ill-treatment that the U.S. Department of State acknowledges as ill-treatment, which is equivalent to torture. There's no distinction in international human rights or humanitarian law. They are routinely or annually acknowledged as forms of ill-treatment in the U.S. Department of State country reports on human rights by this State Department and others.
Yeah, but I think the interesting thing was, for example, the Department of Justice memorandum authorized or discussed without qualification the use of drugs to disorient persons. Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld ordered the in his policy memo medical personnel to help set the levels of harshness of interrogation. And he also said that interrogators could decide whether or not to refuse a detainee's request for medical treatment. These are unique medical violations of international law, and I think it suggests that there was a very specific policy failure, aside from the general human rights issues, that pertains to medical issues.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Rose in South Carolina. Hi, Rose.
Hi. I'm a retired military physician, and the thing that I recall, I haven't been out of the Army that long, but when you're deployed, firstly, you don't get any review of the Geneva Conventions. And so if you have been 23 years, as I was, then you kind of go from recall what physicians' roles are to be in the combat situation. And you have you carry a Geneva Convention card, and it's spelled out. But how many times do you take that card out and read it? The other issue is, for me, when they had Saddam Hussein in the news worldwide with the medic examining him for lysinol, I thought that that was a violation of the Privacy Act in this country, it would have been. And it just seems to me that everybody just accepted that kind of treatment of him. And I think it kind of set the stage mentally for soldiers and other people to think it was okay to abuse people.
Interesting. Before I get a reaction, I need to break in and remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. We're talking about military doctors and prison abuse with my guests Vincent Iacopino and Stephen Miles. Gentlemen, a reaction to an interesting point, Rose.
Well, one of the things that's very striking is that in the Inspector General's report, that's the Army Inspector General, he found that the medical personnel throughout Iraq in the detention facilities were unaware of their Geneva Convention obligations, as the listener suggests. The other thing that was interesting was that the local commanders were also entirely unfamiliar with their Geneva Convention and Army regulation obligations. Part of this, interestingly enough, according to the Fay report that came out this week, was that the Army had become so reliant on websites to carry this data that the shortage of computers in these facilities meant that the documents were unavailable to the commanding officers. One of the aspects of this that is not explored is where on earth were the general counsel, which are supposed to be available to these facilities to advise the commanders on their obligations.
On the other hand, do you need to know the Geneva Convention as a physician to know that you should not phony up the data? That you should not
read. Very good point, Ira.
You don't need to know the Geneva Convention. One of the things you discover is that they put catheters into dead patients to look, and they took dead patients out on litters to make it look like they were still alive.
No, I'm not excusing that in the slightest. There are some specialized Geneva obligations. For example, monthly health checks that are not quite as obvious as those.
No, in addition, I take your point, to being aware of Geneva Conventions and basic principles of medical ethics, that does not get you to the level of responsibility of documenting abuse when you see it. And the leadership that has to carry through the chain of command and through the medical component of that command to people in the field, the people delivering services or doing the interrogations. We have a situation here, apparently from the report Steve has mentioned, where ill treatment and or torture was authorized for some brief period of time at least, and then was carried over, whether intentionally or not, to Iraq. And it's very unclear as to whether or not there was a way to rescind the authorization of ill treatment that applied to Guantanamo in Iraq. At any rate, those abuses took place. And what you really need is the leadership, the communication with the field, and you need effective monitoring, because after all, it doesn't matter what the prescriptions on abuses are unless you're able to effectively monitor what's going on and have procedures for documentation and reporting and evaluating on a routine and unannounced basis. You really can't verify what's happening there.
Rose, I'll let you go. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255. Dr. Miles, any idea how far up the ladder the medical ladder this may go?
It's entirely unclear because the human rights investigations have been very narrowly circumscribed in a couple ways.
I shouldn't have asked you that question. I should have waited till the break. So please forgive me. I'll come back. We'll give you a chance to think of the answer, although I'm sure you don't need any. We'll take a break, everybody. We'll meet back after this short break. Stay with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about military doctors and prisoner abuse with my guests, Dr. Vincent Iacopino, Director of Research at Physicians for Human Rights in Boston, Dr. Stephen Miles, Professor of Medicine at the University of Minnesota School of Medicine, Medical School in Minneapolis. Our number 1-800-989-8255, and when I rudely interrupted Dr. Miles, he was about to answer a question I had.
There are four ways that these existing investigations are inadequate. Number one, they don't address all the facilities, and that includes the secret detention facilities. Second, they use a very narrow definition of abuses that does not conform to the international law or U.S. law. Third, the investigations don't focus on the medicine issues. And fourth, the investigations have not been completely released. For example, the Fay investigation, they've released 1/3 of 1% of the Fay investigation, and it turns out that even the edited executive summary that they released yesterday was incomplete, as reported in the New York Times this morning. And in looking at the medical incidents in there, one can see the edited removal of certain important details which have been disclosed by other examinations. And so this entire investigation so far is inaccurate and incomplete. And one of the things that must be done is we must recognize that it is the world community that has a stake in this. This is not a matter of army discipline. This is a matter of grave interest to the world community, and the investigation must be taken out of the U.S. Army, which, after all, ignored ICRC, International Red Cross reports, which, when human rights abuses were reported, stopped the access of human rights monitors to these prisons, and which is now stonewalling the release of investigatory reports such as the Taguba report and the Fayo report in order simply to prevent full disclosure of the facts.
So you think there's a lot more still yet to be discovered about abuse, well, not just at Abu Ghraib, but in other instances?
Absolutely. We know that these abuses took place at Rifles, at Qaim, at Bagram, and there hasn't been any analysis of these.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Iacopino?
I couldn't agree more that a full and comprehensive investigation that's independent needs to take place, not only to find out the role of medical complicity, but for a true accountability up the chain of command to punish those who are responsible, one, for policies that sanction torture and ill treatment, and those who committed the acts.
Well, I think punishment's important, but I must say that I'm more concerned with the issue of reform. I think that the issue here is one of strengthening the military code of justice. I think we have to improve the training of medical personnel. I think we have to improve the reporting mechanisms inside and outside the chain of command. I think we have to do things like move from a voluntary system whereby prisons can give access to human rights monitors to mandatory random spot checks by human rights monitors. And I think in this regard, the Schlesinger report suggesting that the ICRC should back off, the Red Cross should back off for this new environment we're in, is just completely irresponsible. The Red Cross didn't cause this problem. This problem was caused by a closed prison systems and policies that were lax and inattentive to human rights.
Let me see if I can get a phone call in here. Let's go to Kathleen in Las Vegas. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi there. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. And this is a very interesting and important topic, I feel. As many Americans, I'm concerned in the effect of this war and the reports of prisoner treatment, mistreatment rather, and torture have on our world reputation. My question is, what do you feel are the particular reasons why in this war we're seeing so many reports of torture by our soldiers, especially when we have, as mentioned earlier, a reputation for exemplary behavior in past wars? And do you feel that 9/11 may be the missing element from previous wars?
Dr. Iacopino?
Yes. Well, I think that it has an enormous effect on a country's reputation to participate in torture. And again, we still need to investigate the full extent of this. But it undermines the legitimacy to the extent that countries do not respect human rights. In fact, the U.S. was one of the articulators of human rights. For us not to respect human rights is a terrible contradiction, and it will feed lack of respect for human rights in other countries. Not only will that be the case, but it just doesn't make sense. It exposes others and U.S. soldiers to additional torture, and it undermines our claims to fight for something just, freedom, and so on, if we can't respect human rights.
Dr. Miles, are there in the records of physicians and medics who did report what they saw and were shocked by things they had seen?
Well, it's so far as I can determine, the first reports I found were in January 2004 from medical personnel, and they responded to an inquiry by the Army, which was basically triggered by the Abu Ghraib photographs being coming to the knowledge of the Army. But before that, there was not knowledge and or not reporting. And one of the things we see, for example, in that infamous picture of the pyramid of naked bodies, one detainee was being beaten apparently at the time that picture was taken, and he clutched his chest and dropped to the floor and said, "My heart." It was the guard's impression that he may have killed the person. The detainee was unconscious. A medic came into the room and revived that detainee and saw the pyramid of naked bodies. And instead of doing the usual medical thing of taking a person who he had revived out to a clinic or infirmary, left that detainee in the room where the abuse continued, and not only failed to report the circumstances of that detainee's injury, but also failed to report the other obvious abuse in the room. This is
why do you think that is?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, I think what fundamentally happened was that medical personnel in the Army are medical personnel in the services. They are not soldiers who happen to be medical personnel. And that distinction is a very important one that goes to Dr. Iacopino's dual loyalty report, which I'll let him discuss. But they just simply forgot that their primary and exclusive interest is not participating in the penal or the interrogation functions or any security functions or anything else. Their sole duty is to the welfare of detainees.
Dr. Iacopino?
Well, I think it's a matter of choice. I think it's impossible to be in a situation where you are responsible for promoting someone's health and delivering health care, whether that's in military setting or in prison or elsewhere, and not know that you have a responsibility to act when you're seeing harm being done. And so I think it's a matter of choice, whether one refers to an adequate knowledge base or not. And that's why I think it's important, Steve mentioned, to have effective reforms and, I would add, accountability.
Dr. Miles, any way to predict how many, and I'm assuming, I think from I read from your report, that there were medics involved also. How many people, how many physicians and medics actually saw something and didn't take any action that could have? Were they tens, dozens, hundreds?
Well, the medical complement at Abu Ghraib was apparently around 70. Certainly, they all must have been aware that the system was failing to provide the minimal health care system. The knowledge of the abuse was reportedly widespread at Abu Ghraib. In fact, some of the pictures that we saw that shocked everybody were actually used as screensavers on the office computers, plus they were traded like baseball cards in some of the cafeterias. And medics testified that they saw these abuses, plus they saw other abuses such as the widespread nudity and humiliating nudity and so forth. Plus, the medics were in a position to see the types of injuries that came in, shackling abuses, unexplained bruises, and so forth. And so one can presume that they were in a position to see the entire spectrum of abuses.
I'm Ira Flato, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Dr. Iacopino?
Yes.
It's just shocking to hear these.
Let me add, psychologically there's a lot that happens when people are permissive about abuses, and a lot of people have studied this, and just to say a word or two, people do disconnect from what they otherwise employ to maintain a moral identity, whatever that may be. And they use various psychological means to achieve this moral disengagement, if you will. Albert Bandura talks about this.
If you've been under attack, like the U.S. had been under attack, and you think that you're getting even now, with the enemy.
These are the red flags. These are the red flags that people in these positions ought to recognize and need to learn to deal with. They deal with it by reporting to their superiors, by lodging complaints, and so on. And this was the case. This is how some of this came to be, that some people did not dissociate their moral conscience, and they reported what they thought was dehumanizing treatment. It's ironic, Ira, that the actual photographs that Steve is describing are not at all inconsistent with methods of interrogation that were authorized back in December 2nd of 02. And simply forcing someone to be naked can seem fairly benign for people who make policies like this. Or attaching wires, whether or not it's connected to a current or not, they seem benign on paper. But when you see the face of these acts, you have a better sense of what they are. And I think that we may miss a very important point if we focus on what should have been proscribed, what should have been prohibited. The Geneva Conventions call for respect for a detainee's dignity. And there are so many ways to undermine one's dignity that you can't account for it all in proscriptions.
I know, but we've talked about the Geneva. I'm talking more about medical ethics here, you know, between doctors, to the Hippocratic Oath, you know, to first do no harm, or, you know, taking care of your patient. I mean, we've talked a lot, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk more about the Geneva Convention, but here I'm trying to, it's shocking from a physician could see this and just walk away from it.
Ira, I think that's absolutely right. And you know, this behavior simply, I've worked with the U.S. military in field situations, and I've also worked in the VA for a number of years. And these types of actions simply don't look like the U.S. military that I know. And as a physician and as a person who's worked with the military and U.N. forces too, this is just deeply saddening because it is such a departure from the medical ethics of the military, I know.
And how do you explain it to yourself?
I don't have an explanation.
One element that should be discovered upon further investigation is the extent to which the acts of complicity were willing or unwilling, because there's often an element of coercion. In my experience in documenting complicity in physician abuses in Turkey or in India, elsewhere in Mexico, there are sometimes very overt forms of coercion. And in Iraq, there were actually death threats and threats to cut off a physician's ear if they didn't comply with certain abuses. And so that could be one mitigating factor. But no, I don't think there is a good explanation for it, and I think it does.
So far, there has not been one instance I've read of coercion applied against a medical personnel. For example, the case of a guy who was clearly a combatant against our services. He was shot in the course of being taken into custody. A surgical drain was placed in his body. Also, his shoulder became dislocated. He was taken to the infirmary. A drain was placed in his wound, and no bag was collected to keep the bacteria or germs from going up that drain into his wound, and he was sent back to the prison. He also had an injured leg, and he told the guard that. So then the guard beat him on the leg, with the medic seeing that. And he also, the prisoner, told the guard that the medic told them to not have any pressure put on his dislocated shoulder. The medic came into the prison cell to look at the guy in the cell, found him hanging from his shoulder on the bed, shackled to the bed so that pressure was applied to his shoulder, told the guard not to do it, came back, and found that he was still shackled that way and didn't report it.
All right.
Then a sergeant went and told the doc that this drain was in the wound, and the doc said, it's not my responsibility.
Dr. Miles,
there's no coercion.
I got to stop. Dr. Stephen Miles, Dr. Vincent Iacopino, thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Thank you.
I'm Ira Flatow in New York.